This morning, we have the pleasure of having Steve Stewart join us and share with us this morning. For those of you who don't know Steve, he was one of the original senior pastors of this church until, like, how long? Until 95. So we are so excited to have him.
Thanks. Good morning. This has been a nostalgic morning for me. I knew it would be. I loved hearing the announcement about the helping out the families at Christmas and what the kids are doing this morning. You may not know this, but very intentionally, we wouldn't start meeting publicly Sunday mornings until we were ministering to the poor and being out on the streets. Once that was established, then I thought, okay, I think now we're ready to meet on Sundays. And so it was always in the DNA. These guys, I look at it with joy and some fatherly pride. I love that it stayed in the DNA. So did any of you know that we didn't meet Sunday mornings until we were doing the stuff out there and ministering to the poor? It was great. And it's born great fruit. I'm going to do a couple of things. You have those catalogs. Okay. While I'm talking about the catalog, maybe that one. That'd be great. Could a few people just pass those around? I know some of you got them, but probably most of you didn't. The Christmas catalog is something we do every Christmas, hence Christmas catalog. But it helps us to touch tens of thousands of lives. And I thought I would tell you there's so many things that are in there. A few of you will remember my eldest son, Tim, who's now in his 40s with his own family. In his 40s. I had Tim when I was 6 years old. And by the way, Christina says hello. I haven't seen her for about 5 weeks, but she just flew in from Nepal this weekend. She's where we live in Albuquerque, but she says hi. There's a lot of different things that are in there. You'll see opportunities to get women off the street, which I heard about earlier today. We started a lot of training schools and business training. And we do business loans, many, many, many thousands of women especially. We've got off the streets. So that's in there. We've gotten clean water now. We're pushing towards 600,000 people. And there's that kind of stuff in there. I think, if I did it right, there's a real short little video just to give you an idea. One of the gals, we have something called the School of Purpose. It's part of a ministry, Remnant Generation, in Kampala, Uganda. And the stories are all terrible, and they're all teenagers, usually like 14, 15, typically impregnated by a family member and then thrown out on the street as a bad girl. And their options are virtually none. Well, we're able to bring them in, get them healed up, at every level, well, you know, at the full range. And then they live with us in community, and then there's discipleship, there's job skill training. We do stuff like tailoring. We do tailoring schools in different countries, but that one, they do hairdressing, and they do catering and party planning has taken off in Uganda. Who knew? But here's, we're going to show a quick video. One of the girls named Ketty, just because they sent it to us a couple of weeks ago. There we are.
Ketty is a 17-year-old girl right now. Ketty was staying in the suburbs of Natete down there. And she came to Kampala with her guy or her boyfriend that she really loved. And during that time, the boyfriend moved and left her where they were. So what she did was leave the house where she was put because they had chased them out because of rent. She went to a place where she found a person who had a structure which had iron sheets all over. So she slept there with her daughter. So as they were inside there, whenever it rained, floods would raise up and just disturbed them. They had no mattress. They were sleeping on reeds. So one day we have a heart-to-heart. So we ask questions. How many of you have a decent place you can call home? Sam put up. Katie did not. So she told us of days where the baby would go hungry and she'd just give him drinking water so that the baby would not cry. So what we did, we picked Katie from where she was and brought her to the home so that she can be in a safe space. Katie has been one of the pillars in the crafts class. She chose tailoring, which she does with a passion. But in all classes, secretarial, events management, crafts, she has always been one of the girls who is top. And I would say Katie is one of the biggest success stories that we have. We cannot thank Impact Nations enough for the help that they have put in.
The office just told me that in November, we had 66 graduates from training schools in three different places in India and Africa. So we're very encouraged. We're very encouraged. Christina was in Kenya, I don't know, about a month and a bit ago. Deb was there. Were you there for both trips? Of course you were. We have an amazing history in Kenya. I don't have time to tell you a lot of stories today, but this was probably the most remarkable trip of all. And just give you a couple of things that I wrote down. They went out into the red light district and invited the girls working the streets to come in to a place where they had refreshments, and they prayed for them and shared with them. And one of the things we do is we get them into safe housing, the same kind of thing we do in Uganda, we do in Kenya, where there's housing and then get them healed up and then teach them a job skill. Then we have them apprentice with somebody who got rescued a year or two ago, and then we give them a loan. And did you know it just kept going? Word of mouth, after you guys left, 119 women, prostituted women off the streets now. With a new life from when you were there. Isn't that good? And Christina and Deb and some others went into the largest men's prison. Until we got in there with Christina 2-3 years ago, it was unheard of to have a woman in a men's maximum security prison. And preached the gospel. And 954 came to Christ. And we got Bibles for them. But by the time we were getting the Bibles for them, they said they need another 500. So we got 1,450 Bibles to them last week. And that came out of that trip. Christina did a TV show. I'm really proud of my wife. You guys wouldn't know this, but 31 years ago, when we were getting this church planted and we were in house churches, I couldn't get her to say boo. Yeah. And now in much of the world, I'm Mr. Christina Stewart. You know, it's wonderful. She did a TV show, and women started phoning in from all over. And the calls were, and they were coming to Christ, and they were asking for prayer, because she talked a lot about, just how Christ comes to us in our pain. They had to bring in 4 extra switchboard operators. Then they had to link to another switchboard. And by the time 2 weeks were done, because the calls kept coming, over 200,000 women had called in and got prayer. That's not bad. Yeah, I want to be like her when I grow up. I really did struggle what to talk to you about today, because my heart is full because I'm here. And this is the first church or ministry that I ever planted, and it is a very, very, very special place in my heart. I loved my Cambridge years, and I would have stayed here. I thought I'd just stay here forever and a day, maybe one day, maybe even get as old as George. But you did get the word out far and wide that you turned 50. You know, everybody knew it. It was on the 11 o'clock news in Albuquerque. It was. But the Lord spoke to us prophetically through our spiritual parents, John and Lori White, and that began a process, and we ended up going west. But I love this church. And so there was much I want to say. But rather than keep you here till 4 o'clock, I'll just say one thing. I want to talk to you a little bit about grace and truth. John's prologue, which is the most remarkable, in my opinion, well, St. Augustine said that John's prologue were the most sublime words that were ever penned, and I would agree. I would encourage you to spend a lot of time in John 1, 1 to 18. And in there, verse 14, and a little later it says it again in 18, Jesus Christ, full of grace and truth. So I want to talk a little bit about the grace of God and the truth, how truth and grace are not paradoxical. They belong together. I almost feel like just telling you what I wanted to talk about. There were so many things, but we'll stick with that. Lord, I'm just asking again. I know we've just prayed, but I'm asking again, Holy Spirit, that you would speak to all of us. We ask for revelation. The last thing we need is just more information. Lord, just speak into our spirits as only you can do. Thank you, Jesus. Amen. I've been on a real interesting journey. I may get to the message or not. I never know. But I have been on a huge journey now. I've been walking with the Lord for 43 years. And the last 6 or 7 have by a mile been the most profound for me. I have been pressing in to the triune God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, more than ever in my whole life. I'm pressing into the mystery of Christ. If any of you are interested, I do podcasts, and this next series starting in January is on the mystery of Christ. You see, we have a beautiful gospel. The thing that God has been challenging me with as I share with pastors and leaders in different countries, as I take teams, he keeps saying to me, not is your gospel authoritative or is it powerful? He says, is it beautiful? And he asks me that all the time. Everybody in this town is made for beauty. Did you know that? Because everybody, there's two things I can tell you about the people in Cambridge, not only because I lived here, but because it's the people everywhere in the world. I tell pastors this all the time. I say, I guarantee you there's not a single person in this city who God created for meetings. He created every single person for family. And we got to learn how to put that into practice because we keep offering meetings, best worship, best coffee, best preaching, best whatever, come to our meeting. I know I'm overstating it, but I don't have enough time to be subtle. What they're made for is family, because all of creation is a reflection of the triune God. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in constant, never-ending, self-emptying, what's called kenotic relationship one with another. And when we move in that rhythm, that's when we see incredible things. I am constantly amazed at what we're seeing happen all over the world. And I promise you, it is not because we are organized enough, smart enough, or anything else enough. It's because if you learn to move in the rhythm of Christ, you learn to step in this kenotic, interactive, ultimately communal love of God, it comes with a supernatural favor. I promise you, the whole direction of the cosmos is marked by things like love, and mercy and compassion. I almost taught about compassion today. And when we start to move in that rhythm, things just happen. We have things happen to us we can hardly believe all the time. God opened a door for us. We were in India. I love India. I've been there 25 times. And we went into a brick factory. And brick factories are, of course, manned by slaves. Did you know there are 28 million slaves today in the world? There are more slaves today than the cumulative total of 400 years of the African to the West slave trade. 400 years doesn't add up to how many there are today. So we're doing some stuff. And God's opening doors because we're learning to follow Jesus. I think we're probably just going to shotgun today. Is that all right? I mean, who's going to say, no, that's not all right. I'm out of here. I know. But following in the rhythm of Christ is the journey that I've been learning about. And I will be learning until I draw my last breath and probably beyond. Because when you learn to recognize where Christ is moving, you recognize his footsteps, it comes with an incredible, incredible favor. A favor you just pinch yourself. I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico now. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, I don't know the deputy dog catcher. Nobody knows me. I don't know anybody with any influence because I don't need to. But when I'm following the assignment of Christ, it always comes with divine favor. I don't even know how many governors and senators and prime ministers I've met. I know my son Tim, who's got great favor. He came home, oh, I don't know, 3 months ago and got into bed, just got home. Gets to sleep, his phone rings at 1:45, he's sitting far crying out loud because he was so jet-lagged. Picks up the phone, hello, this is the president of Kenya. Hello, sir, he said, Dad, that's how you wake up at 300 miles an hour. Hear me, it's got nothing to do with Steve or Tim or Christina Stewart. It's got everything to do with an incredible acceleration and favor that comes when we learn to move in the rhythm of Christ. He said, come follow me. But you know what? I'm just going all over the... I may as well just close this, save my battery. remember in Matthew 4, 20 to 24. Jesus says to the two sets of brothers, the fishermen, he says, come follow me. He never said, and this was really important for me, this was a download I got in Burundi once about 10 years ago. He never said, come follow me and I'll lead you to the Father. Never said it. He didn't say to them, come follow me and I will heal up the hurts in your heart. He didn't even say, come follow me and you'll go to heaven. He said, come follow me. There's a job to do. I'm going to teach you how to fish for people. And it was over this great sense of purpose that they dropped everything and followed him. And as they followed him, they encountered the Father. Their hearts got healed. And he said, you're going to be with me forever. But that was not the invitation. Boy, I'm really just going. But can I tell you something that this church was built on long ago? I'm not saying it needs to be the same now. It shouldn't be. Everything changes. But I tell you what. Somehow we understood that God has made every single person in this city and country and world with two great needs. They reflect the Creator's heart. And those two needs are security, and I hear the sound of security here today. I hear you guys address each other as family. You say that. Hey, family. Security is a primary need. To be nurtured, to belong. But there is a second need that is every bit as foundational and reflects the heart of the triune God, and that is significance. Your life has to make a difference. Often the young people are really aware of that, the energy. These guys had so much energy. I bet they still do, but you can't. You know, George was the only seat in the church then that had a seat belt because we had to keep them in. And then when you get older, I watch it. The odometer passes somewhere 45, 50, and we start thinking, I want to leave a footprint. So Jesus said, come follow me, there's a job to do. And the job is the ultimate cosmic purpose of the restoration of all things. Which leads me to how do I recognize and how can you recognize where Jesus is going? Because he's not staying still. And folks, he certainly didn't say, come follow me, I'm going to church. He didn't. And he didn't hang on the cross so that you'd spend 2 hours a week in church. Now, I'm a church planter. I've planted a whole bunch of churches. I'm a churchman. But this is where we celebrate the journey of following him. I was in a church in the Silicon Valley in San Jose. I've now been there 3 times, but the first time I went was in May. And they're all really wealthy people, and they all work for, you know, they all work for Google and Apple and HP. But they'd never been outside the walls. None of them had ever prayed for anybody out there, which, by the way, is, depending on which study you look at, 95 to 97% of Christians never once in their whole life outside the safety of their church building or their house say, may I pray for you? So I did the weekend thing, and then I took them out to a park, and they told me what they tell me everywhere when I do this. They tell me in Bulgaria. They tell me in Bogota. They tell me in Mexico City. They tell me in Calgary. They tell me everywhere, oh, that won't work here. And I always say, oh, you're probably right. You know your community better than I do. Why don't we just go out and see if anything happens anyway? And they always come back floating 6 inches off the ground. That church it wasn't very big. It was a sub-church. It was an English congregation of a 3,000-person church. So I don't know what we took out. Not many. 140 or something. And they went out for an hour and a quarter, and then the rain came. They'd never prayed for anybody. And they realized when we came back and they're telling stories and all this stuff that was going on, that they had touched almost 300 lives. I think I just remember, didn't I take you guys out like 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago? And we touched a bunch of lives. Let me get back to this. Jesus said, follow me. And how do we recognize his footsteps? For me, at least, I recognize him in 3 ways. Where he's moving, I always see rescue. I always see rescue. N.T. Wright, who's a terrific New Testament theologian, he says rescue is probably the best synonym for salvation there is. And if you look at any of our stuff, like those catalogs, it always says rescuing lives, because that's what the Lord spoke to me 16 years ago. Anyway, I look for rescue. For example, I was in... we had a team in northern India. I started to tell you earlier, and I got distracted. But last March, we did a journey of compassion, and we went into a brick factory. That's right, I started talking about slaves, and then I was gone. We went into a brick factory, and it's, of course, completely populated by slaves, people who can't leave and don't get paid. And the medical team came to me and said, 100% of the children are malnourished. They were eating brick dust because all they got was a small bit of rice once a day. We encountered this sometimes. And so, you know, we did the clinic. But the bottom line is that when you're following Jesus, it comes with divine favor. Which I told you. Here's the divine favor. I have a spiritual son in India. Maybe I'll tell you about him in a minute too. But anyway, went to the factory owner and said, if we can pay for a child to go to school, would you allow them out? And in India, like many countries, although there's ostensibly free education, it really isn't. It's free as long as you got the money. There's registration fee. They've got to have two uniforms. They've got to have shoes. They've got to have books, etc. It's $130 a kid. The guy said, well, I don't think anybody will want to do that, but if you want, you can. Yeah, you can do it. We were amazed. We got the word out, and in 5 weeks, $100,000 came in from all over the world. And we have those kids. I mean, they were naked and semi-naked. They'd never left the brick walls that they, after all, were contributing to building. They'd never been to a school. They'd never been anywhere. And now in school and getting a nutritious meal in the school every day, we got 862 kids out of slavery and into school. Is that divine favor? My son Tim stood up at a gathering and said, I believe God's going to give us grace for 300. And I went, oh, no, son, why'd you say that? 862. I was just back there again on a meeting. We're going to do about 1,200 this year. Where there's rescue, there's favor. When Deb goes out with Christina to women working the streets out of their desperate need to feed their children, and following Jesus as he runs into the darkness, there's divine favor. Did you know directly and indirectly we've now got over 7,000 people out of prison who shouldn't be there? Anybody remember the old days? We had every week in our bulletin Luke 4, 18 and 19. Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me. Remember? Because he's anointed me to preach good news to the middle class church members. And then freedom for the prisoners. And I used to always think, well, that's inner healing. That's the people that are bound up. And then I started seeing prisoners get free. And I thought, maybe freedom for the prisoners means freedom for the prisoners. It's a bigger gospel than you thought, folks. Can I tell you that? It's the greatest adventure of my life, but it is a way bigger gospel than you thought. You know, we took four trips. We call them journeys of compassion. By the way, before I forget, there's one to Colombia. It's only 5 weeks from now, but Colombia is so close to here compared to Africa and India. It's hardly worth doing up your seatbelt. So the airfare's way less, and there's no jet lag because it's north-south. So if you want to come, I'm not kidding. If you don't quite have enough faith to do that, just get Deb to lay hands on you after the service. And I got distracted again. Anyway, rescue. And there's rescue happening all over. And reconciliation. 2 Corinthians 5. We're given a ministry of reconciliation. What the heck does that mean? Well, it means a couple of things. One, if we're going to follow Jesus, the movement of Christ is to reconcile. Even when I'm ticked off, even when that doesn't seem right, Jesus isn't ticked off and he never says that doesn't seem right. He just says love him, right? Ministry of reconciliation. So the first thing is rescue. Say rescue. Where you see rescue or an opportunity to rescue, you're going to step into the rhythm of God. I promise you. You will find Jesus there. This is why we tell people as we take them to refugee camps, we take them to dumps, we take them to the poorest of the poor, beggars' colonies. I always say, by the way, you are not taking Jesus there. He's already waiting for you. Right? Matthew 25, his last public message. When you did it to them, you were doing it to me. So we said rescue. Reconciliation is the second one. And the third one is restoration. This is huge. If you're going to follow Jesus, you're going to step into restoration at so many levels. So many levels. I don't have time, but if you want to, some of you are taking notes somehow out of this ramble. Isaiah 65, 17 to 23. A new heaven and a new earth, and it's all about restoration. It's about people who were homeless having homes, people who were hungry being fed, people whose children were taken from them no longer being taken from them. Last weekend, I was in Tijuana on the other side of the wall working with refugees. And, you know, I'm a Canadian in a strange land now. Living in America is an interesting time for me. And I just want to say a couple of things that I learned, or at least were verified for me last week. They are not migrants. They're not coming to get jobs, better life. They are refugees. Most of them are from the Northern Triangle. That's Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. And they're, every single one, they're running for their lives, them and their kids. I met a couple last weekend, this young couple, they got four kids from 8 down to 3. And I met them in this refugee camp where we were doing stuff. And they had walked with their children for 6 months from Honduras. How do you get your head around that? I can't imagine me doing it, and I'm not 3 years old. So we just found favor. It was amazing. It was amazing. God healed and everything. It's wonderful. So if you want to step into the rhythm of Christ, look for rescue and reconciliation and restoration, and that's what you will find. And you certainly don't have to, as you guys know, you don't have to go to India and Africa and even Tijuana. Although it's not bad to go there. It's not bad at all. You can't live the same after you do that. Am I telling the truth, Deb? You can't, can you? You just can't live the same. Not only do we get in touch with the incredible pain, but we get in touch with the incredible grace of God. A couple of things. I'm just really, boy, this is wild. I have no idea what I've said the last 20 minutes. But my heart is full. Now I know I couldn't figure out which message I was supposed to teach. So just bounce around. You guys staying with me? In 313... Constantine embraced Christianity. And instead of being a persecuted religion for 300 years, now it became accepted. And within one generation, it became the in religion. So instead of being the ones who lost their jobs, etc., for their faith, now if you wanted to advance in the government, advance in the army, advance in business, you became a Christian. There were mass baptisms of 10,000 at a time and so forth. Some of that, you guys know about that. And Christianity, as it was lived out, they usually call it Christendom, became very, very different. But what happened was the church started seeking to share power and influence with the state, with the powers that be. And we are in a time profoundly where that is happening now. It's been happening for a while, but the 21st century, we're in overdrive. And it comes out in so many ways. In America, evangelical Christianity has become incredibly politicized, inevitably with the right wing. Although I have lots of my Christian associates and friends who send me stuff, and it's the same, different party, but it's the very same thing. And you hear it in the messages in the church. You hear a variation on what was in the 80s and 90s called the prosperity message, but you still hear it. If you want to have a successful church, preach on how God wants to bless you and let you be all you can be, and on and on and on. You, everybody knows that message? I even hear it in the songs. The songs we sing are about me and not him. You make me feel like. When I'm with you, I feel like, I'm probably making some of you uncomfortable, but there you go. I got great news for you. I'll be done in a little while. And but what it is, it's not bad people. It's this thing. It's this Constantinian influence that's come into the church. My journey has taken me to be, I just need Christ more and more and more, and I spend longer with Him every morning, and there's nothing meritorious about that. He's exposed my weakness, how much I need Him. And you know what's interesting? Our songs, behold the Lion of the Tribe of Judah, right? You know that sound. We're victorious, God's in control, and if I keep naming songs, I'm going to make more people uncomfortable. But what is it? It's a reflection of this Constantinian Christianity. We win. We win. It's interesting, that verse, behold the Lion of the Tribe of Judah, is from Revelation 5. And he sees this. John hears this sound. Wah! And he turns expecting to see the lion. What does he see? The lamb slain. That is so important, guys. Hang around that. It's Revelation 5, and I think about verse 7 is he sees the lamb. This was a little bit of what I wanted to say, possibly today. Jesus said, come follow me. And then he said this. In fact, he said this more frequently than any other saying in all the Gospels. He said, whoever seeks to save his life, whoever seeks to hold on to self-advantage, is going to lose it. But whoever loses it for my sake, I guarantee you, you'll find real life. One of the challenges for me, because I spend more than half my year around in the developing world, and I've got wonderful sons and daughters who, when they come to Christ, everything changes. Inevitably, they lose their jobs, they lose their friends, they lose everything. And then they find His life. He called it abundant life, right? John 10:10. Abundant life won't give you a bigger car. It won't give you a better job. See, isn't it interesting? I go to meetings sometimes, and I'm listening to them talk, and they're praying for the breakthrough. What does breakthrough mean? It means that new job, that new house, that new advantage. Now, I'm not saying those are bad things, but those are not what it means to follow Christ. I think for him, the breakthrough is Romans 8:29, that we are being conformed into his image. Do you want to know what the image of Christ is? It's called kenotic love. You can read about it in Philippians 2, 5 to 11, where he emptied himself. His whole life was a self-emptying, and he continues to empty himself. And I'm not talking about a morbid, self-flagellating walk with Jesus at all. Do I sound morbid? I hope I don't. I won the kingdom lottery. I did. I get to see tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands of people come to Christ every year. I get to see whole communities change. No wonder I pinch myself. If you wonder about all those bruises on my arms, it's from me pinching myself. Why? Because somehow in his incredible grace, his incredible mercy, he showed me a picture when I was in Germany, and it never left me. I'd never talked about it. He showed it to me while I was pastoring this church. And he took me by the hand, and we began to run across harvest fields and run and run. And I never lost that. I'm telling you, it's all grace. You know, we say grace is unmerited favor, and that's fine, but I really believe that grace says this: I'm always with you, and I'm always for you. That's the message. That's the beauty of the gospel. How beautiful is your gospel in Cambridge? How beautiful is your gospel at work? How beautiful is your gospel? It is as beautiful as your revelation of the beauty of Jesus. That's what Paul's saying, right? In 2 Corinthians 3, we're being transformed from glory to glory. What is that? We behold the beauty of the Lord. The beauty of the Lord. And we don't try to get more beautiful. We don't try to get kinder and more patient. We don't try anything. We just get in this jet stream of following Him. And all of a sudden, all these amazing things happen. But they happen for Him, not for me. Did you know in India, where I've got a son and daughter in the Lord, and two of them, they encountered Christ as Hindus 25 years ago. And I think it's this month that we're crossing 900,000 baptized in house church being discipled people. That's good, isn't it? 150,000 in a year, that's good. Four journeys of compassion, 80,000 new disciples. And those journeys are only 12 days long, aren't they, Deb? You see what I'm talking about? Supernatural favor? You can't plan that. You can't be slick enough or smart enough to have 80,000 people not only come to Christ. They turn their hearts to Christ, they get baptized, and they get followed up within 24 hours, and then they're in a family. Family. The two being needs, right? Nobody's made for meetings. What are they made for? What's that?